Hi, you're listening to Truth News Radio, broadcasting to you on the 3rd of April 2013. My name's Hereward Fenton. Welcome to the show. In the second hour, I've got a guest coming on, Nicole Bilsma, who is an expert in some of the problems that go wrong with people's homes and buildings, a whole variety of chemical and electromagnetic issues that can make people sick and can interfere with your life. Nicole had the experience of 10 miscarriages herself. She is a practicing naturopath and a building biologist, but her experience with electromagnetic energy really affected her life, and she decided to really focus on that and has now written a book. And she also runs a college that helps people understand some of the problems in their homes. So this is going to be a really interesting interview, and we're going to get into a lot of topics. We're going to be covering a range of electromagnetic energy issues, electrical wiring, magnetic fields, mobile phone frequencies, wireless frequencies, and wireless routers and smart meters, the whole spectrum of electromagnetic effects. So I do encourage you to tune in the second hour. In the first hour, I'm going to be going through some stories on our news feeds here. And top of the list is climate change. I know that's everyone's favourite topic. Listeners to this show will know that I love to play you wonderful little news clips from our government news authority, our state news authority, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, which tells us what to think and tells us how we should feel about things. Very important, because they like to shape people's perceptions, and that's what they see their job is. See, the people who run the country believe it is their job to shape your opinion. They only think about how you see them. They spend a lot of time in this kind of PR activity. And what's very important is when they have extremely hated policies like the carbon tax, they have to continually tell you that it's actually good, it's actually good, it's actually good, when we all know it's terrible, we all hate it, no one wanted it, practically no one voted for it. They could only get it through by lying to us. That's the only way they could pass the law. We had a government that said, there will be no carbon tax under a government I lead. And then, what do you know, within about a month of that statement, the carbon tax rolled straight through. And, of course, was passed in Parliament by a wafer-thin majority that the government has. Of course, the government in Australia will be thrown out. They'll be on the trash heap of history as one of the most disliked governments in history. But the carbon tax is going to stay unless it does get repealed by the Liberal Party, who will probably be running the country. But we have in Australia, as in most of the so-called democracies, we have a two-party dictatorship. This is essentially a situation where it's just alternate takes on the same basic theme. Some policies, the way I see it, is that some policies have to go through one channel because they appeal more to those of us who have a socialist, collectivist, greater good kind of meme. And those are all the nanny state legislations, things like the carbon tax, Medicare, compulsory superannuation. Anything that's compulsory, right, is generally seen as being good. Somehow that, you know, because it's compulsory, it's making you safe, you know, forcing you to wear seatbelts when you're driving, forcing you to take random breath tests when you're driving, forcing you to go through body scanners when you're traveling overseas. And I will be talking more about body scanners in this show, please. Be surprised, because I'm going to harp on that theme quite a bit. But let's continue with climate change. I have a fresh story off the presses here from the ABC. Climate change report, a wake-up call, according to the climate change minister. We actually have a climate change minister in Australia. His name is Greg Combe. And he says that a new report, it's actually not new, it's been out for over a month, probably a couple of months. I've already talked about it on this show anyway. They're just dredging it up to make you, oh my God, a new report. You know, it's like, oh, new evidence that the world is going to end or would have ended had the government not forced us to pay the carbon tax. So here it is. The new report is a wake-up call to those who deny global warming is a problem. I love the way they put that word deny there right at the beginning of the first paragraph. Again, a key word, deny, denier, think Holocaust, think lunatic. Anyway, let's continue. The Climate Commission's latest report warns that climate change is already increasing the intensity and frequency of extreme weather in Australia. Oh boy. The report, which has been backed by Australia's top climate scientists and science bodies, says that in some cases, Australia's climate has shifted permanently. Wow. Okay, extreme weather. What's that? Is that like, you know, extreme weather, like when it rains really hard? Like, I mean, it's like a hurricane. Is a cyclone extreme weather or is it like when it doesn't rain? Is that extreme weather? I mean, what is extreme weather? You know, what would be nice is it would be if they'd put a little footnote there to define what the meaning of extreme weather is. Because, you know what, I think a few years ago when we had this drought that went on for years and years and years, they were saying that the drought was very strong evidence and of climate change and was in line with the predictions on climate change. Well, we have just been absolutely drenched in rainfall in Australia over the last few years, virtually everywhere. But they're now saying that this extreme rainfall is just, more evidence. So this concept of extreme. So if it doesn't rain, that's extreme. If it rains a lot, that's extreme. So what would not be extreme? Is it if it just like rains every 3 days for like, what, half an hour? I'm just trying to figure out what they mean when they say extreme weather. They'll never tell you though, because we live in this kind of Kafkaesque reality where words are used that have no meaning. I mean, the word climate change really has no meaning either. I mean, the climate does change. We know that. It changes from year to year. It changes from place to place. It's a meaningless, pointless term. But it's imbued with emotional force to make you feel things. Similarly, the term extreme weather. Extreme, okay. It's something you've got to be very, you know, very worried about. So anyway, let's have a look here at what the ABC is actually saying. And I have an audio clip here where Greg Combe decries the climate change deniers. Yes, he finally gives them their due. Here we go.
The climate change minister, Greg Combe, says this report is a wake-up call to those who deny that climate change is a problem. He told our chief political correspondent, Sabra Lane, that it also reinforces why the federal government has put a price on carbon.
These are things that people in the community need to be aware of, and of course they're the underpinning reason why the government has moved to reduce greenhouse gas emissions as part of an international effort to tackle climate change. The scientific facts are very clear and we've got to deal with this issue. You cannot bury your head in the sand like Tony Abbott would have us do.
But also, you've just also pointed to the international effort here. Isn't that the key to this? Despite all the money being spent in Australia on fighting climate change, it comes to naught if China, India and other major developing countries don't sign an internationally binding agreement to cut emissions.
Well, of course, this is part of the nonsense of the debate that we've had in Australia that Tony Abbott has propagated. First of all, he says the science is crap. That's his word. And then he says, so there, nothing we need to do about it, and what's more, no one else is doing anything about it, all of which is complete rubbish, absolute garbage. I just had the climate change minister from China in Australia last week taking me through the emissions trading schemes that will introduce carbon pricing into a range of cities and provinces in China this year, and taking me through the fact that from 2015 China will have a national emissions trading scheme.
Okay, I just have to stop it there. Greg Combe, you are insane. You are ridiculous. You are preposterous. You are a joker. China is building a coal-fired power station every week. The amount of emissions that are coming out of China is going up at a rate, even with the slowdown in the economy, I know that's real, but the growth in energy consumption hasn't slowed that much. And even without that massive increase in coal-fired power stations, the amount that they already produce is just on a scale that's like 1,000 to 1 of Australia. And you can't stop that. This ridiculous idea of a trading scheme to which would somehow change all that is just so preposterous. Honestly, I find it really hard to contain myself even talking about this. To have such a fool in government is really the main problem we have here. Greg Combe is a complete fool and does not deserve to have a job. He does not deserve to be earning a couple hundred grand a year for talking utter rubbish. And, you know, the Chinese are just playing lip service to this. They have no interest in it. They refused to sign any of the treaties. The famous one, the big one, the big build-up we had back in 2009, they refused to sign it. They won't commit to any of these things. It's ridiculous. No one in the rest of the world thinks it's real or thinks it's a problem. There is a cartel of corrupt bankers, financiers, and idiots from the green spectrum who cannot think for themselves. They cannot think straight. They believe in this greater good construct, and they think that anything that they do, anything that they sacrifice to the greater good must be good in itself because it's got this environment thing tagged on the end of it. We are the fools here. We are being played, and we're being played by the Chinese. What really bothers me most is the lack of critical reasoning, the lack of intellectual capability to understand how fraudulent the whole thing is. You don't have to study it. You don't have to have a PhD in climate science. You can see the fraud all the way through. And I did actually play some of the interview with Tim Flannery a couple of weeks ago. But in fact, I may actually play a bit more of that in this show because the ABC has been harping on this Climate Commission report a lot. And it's quite a ludicrous thing. And, you know, I'm carrying on about it, but so are they. And my job here is to counteract the lies that they're putting out. With Truth News Radio, I'll be right back. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Seems to me like they want us to be afraid, man. Maybe we just like being afraid. So used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life, throwing strife into the mix.
Hi, you with Truth News Radio, welcome back. And I'm talking about climate change, going through the latest ABC propaganda, which will turn your brain into mush if you actually imbibe it. I'm actually trying to deconstruct it as I go through. I find it's a form of therapy for myself, and hopefully it may help those of us who are forced to sip through this rubbish that comes forth on the television and the radio or the newspapers if you are unlucky enough to be confronted with it. And I was just playing you there a clip of an interview with the climate change minister, Greg Combe, who was telling us how wonderful the Chinese are because they're really concerned about climate change and they've signed up to these marvellous agreements. Anyway, let's continue with that clip from the ABC.
And so will Korea from 2015. California started carbon pricing from the 1st of January this year. New Zealand's had an emissions trading scheme for several years before us. All across the European Union, there's carbon pricing through an emissions trading scheme. And countries are taking action on this issue. It's patchy in some respects, but in the international community, the science is respected. It's recognised that there needs to be efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and countries are taking steps to achieve it. We are but one of those countries, and we, of course, have a responsibility. We're the highest greenhouse gas emitter per capita amongst all the advanced economies, and other countries expect us to do our bit. And I can assure you my Chinese counterpart made quite clear that as our number one trading partner, China expects Australia to play its part while they're playing their part.
Shouldn't there be more focus now on mitigating the effects of climate change, as we've seen in recent years with the Brisbane floods, the intense cyclones, billions of dollars being spent on repairs and instant cash handouts to families? Wouldn't it be more sensible for that money to go into mitigation to try and stop the worst effects?
Well, what's sensible is to put in place the cheapest, most effective method to cut our greenhouse gas emissions, and that's what the government has done with the carbon price mechanism. What's sensible is to support the development and deployment of renewable energy and energy efficiency. And that's
okay, we'll just leave it there. There's really nothing of any interest in that statement. I'm going to actually play you now another clip. I played a little bit of this a couple of weeks ago. Angry summer made worse by climate change. Oh, yes, the report by the Climate Commission is called the Angry Summer. Notice again the use of language. This comes straight out of the George Orwell playbook. It's about making you feel something. It's not about facts. It's not about facts, ladies and gentlemen. It's emotional manipulation. And we have here one of the arch manipulators, really, who's just a puppet fool, another one of them, by the name of Tim Flannery, has some science credentials, wrote a few books, and then was offered a lot of money to front up this this government puppet organization called the Climate Commission, which just pumps out garbage, propaganda, lies. Did I mention that they lie? I hope I did, because that really is quite an important point to bear in mind, is that there is a lot of outright lying going on, and we have the right to be angry about it, ladies and gentlemen. We have the right and the duty to be angry and to do something about it. So let's play here a clip from Tim Flannery talking to the Australian Propaganda Corporation about Australia entering new climatic territory. Woohoo, here we go.
It's one of the most hotly disputed questions in the debate over climate change. Can extreme weather events like bushfires and floods be blamed on global warming? Scientists have always been cautious about linking any one event to climate change. But now Australia's Climate Commission has joined the dots between a series of weather-related disasters and global warming in what it calls the nation's angry summer. This year was the hottest summer ever recorded in Australia, with almost three quarters of the country experiencing extreme temperatures and many places reporting record maximums. In December, three states, Tasmania, New South Wales and Victoria, battled major bushfires which burnt through thousands of hectares of scrub. January was the hottest January on record. There were 7 days running where the average daily maximum for the country was more than 39 degrees. Just weeks later, Queensland and much of northern New South Wales were underwater as record rainfalls caused extensive flooding. The report was released by the Chief Climate Commissioner, Professor Tim Flannery. He joined me in our Sydney studio. Professor Flannery, in this report, what link are you asserting between extreme weather events over the past summer, fires, floods and so on, and climate change?
Well, there are really two aspects to that. One is that everything we're seeing is consistent with what the climate scientists have been telling us now for decades, and it's very consistent.
Just bear in mind that 6 or 7 years ago, when the when New South Wales and the Victoria were in the grip of the worst drought in many years, they were saying that these droughts are consistent with the predictions and the modelling of the climate scientists. That's climate change is going to produce these terrible droughts. Okay, well, the droughts abated, right? The cycle changed. We had the El Nino, the La Nina, the Pacific Oscillation, as they call it. Guess what? The drought ended. But they're now saying that the rain is evidence of climate change and is consistent with the modelling. It's just incredible. The outright rank deception and despicable dishonesty of the people who are running not only the Climate Commission but the ABC and your government. Continuing with the clip.
And with the physics and chemistry that we know, the way the Earth works. But secondly, you know, we've seen 123 records broken, and each of those records really takes us into a new climatic territory. And when you get records being broken at that scale, you can start to see a shifting from one climate system to another. So the climate has, in one sense, actually changed, and we are now entering a new series of climatic conditions that we just haven't seen before.
Now, let me just give you my one person's experience of the summer we just had in Sydney and the Blue Mountains in New South Wales. It was a bog-standard, ordinary summer, far cooler than usual, with a lot of rain, and it was not hot. It was not a hot summer. So this angry summer may have gripped other parts of Australia, but it strangely missed the whole Sydney region. That is a simple fact, and I can guarantee it and vouch for it because I was there the whole summer, and I experienced how cold it got in January with the rain that just went on and on and on. It was not hot. Continuing with the ABC propaganda clip now.
How do you know that the new climatic conditions are responsible for the extreme weather events? How do you know that it's just not some combination of meteorological circumstances?
Sure. Look, the study suggests it's a 1 in 500 chance that this sort of stuff is just normal. This is way outside the range of anything we've experienced before. It is really an extraordinary summer. And when you view it in the context of what's happened in the US at the last summer, where there was over 3,000 climatic records broken, and the Arctic ice conditions again at record lows, you start seeing a pattern that there's been a shift from a climate where we had quite a number of cool days and quite a number of warm days. Now we're getting far fewer cool days, many, many more warm days.
Well, that's an outright lie, Tim. We have far more cool days this summer than we had warm days. I will vouch for that, and I will take that up with you in any agenda, in any arena, in any court of law. I think you're actually lying to us right there, Tim.
And a number of record-breaking hot days.
Haven't we in the past been cautioned not to link individual weather events with climate change? And so, for example, how do you account for, say, at the moment in the United States, where on the East Coast they're standing by for an extreme blizzard, which is unusual for this time of year, something that would happen more like the dead of winter?
Well, look, that's a whole very complex issue you've raised there. Just to go back to the point, though, about, you know, is this one event or not, we're not talking about one event here, we're talking about an emerging trend, and we can see that that trend is entirely consistent with what the climate scientists have been saying for years.
Well, Tim, it's very complex, and you reduce it to the level of stupidity with your ridiculously simplistic metaphors. We'll be right back after the break. You're with Truth News Radio. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And we're talking about the angry summer. The worst, hottest, most incredible, scorching bummer of a summer that we've ever had. And that's according to many, many experts and many important men with white coats like Tim Flannery, who say it is so. And they say it with the full weight and gravitas of the government state news agency, the Australian Broadcasting Propaganda Organisation. Now, we've certainly given you their side of the story. Now, let's have a look at another view on the same data, the same period of time. We actually have some satellite data here, and it's reported on by Joanne Nova at joannenova.com.au. Hottest summer record in Australia? Not so, says UAH satellite data. UAH stands for the University of Alabama in Huntsville, and they have some satellite data on summers since the records began, and it goes back to about 1979. And as Joanne says on her site, there is a strange disparity between what the satellites record and what the Bureau of Meteorology in Australia told us was true. The satellite data shows that the summer of 2012 to 2013 was close to ordinary, compared with the entire satellite record going back to 1979. Not a record, not even extreme. The graph data comes thanks to John Christie, Director of Earth System Science Centre. And it was graphed by Ken Stewart and inspired by Tom Quirk at Quadrant. So, as she says here, perhaps there is some error in the data. And I'm actually looking at the graph here, and indeed, you look at it and you think, wow, there's just nothing there that looks... you know, it's a little warmer than the previous year, but, you know, you look at that line, and we had some hot years. We had, like, 1991 was a hot year. 1998 was a hot year. We had a few hot years in the noughties, 2006, 2010. But according to the satellites, sorry, Tim, it wasn't a record breaker at all. As Ken Stewart says, according to the Bureau of Meteorology, last summer was a record, yet the satellites say it was a pretty ordinary summer, 14th warmest out of the last 35. The last time there was such a discrepancy was in 1983. The two series then, since then, have been reasonably similar. So, it's interesting that the data is mostly similar. Occasionally, they have a discrepancy. And there's a graph here that actually maps the Bureau of Meteorology graph against the UAH graph. And you can see, yes, they do match up pretty well, except, boy, 2013, they just do not match at all. There is a slight anomaly there in the early 1980s, but the anomaly here in this graph is massive, massive, ladies and gentlemen. And when I say massive, I mean huge. And I'm thinking fraud, fraud, fraud. You know, bright red warning signs are flashing in my brain as I look at this graph. He says here, the other large discrepancy in 1983 was a year when bomb records showed a very high temperature and UAH records showed an average one. Perhaps that is a clue. Well, let's have a look. Still reading here from Joanne Nova. The UAH data is not covering the same area as the Bureau of Meteorology stats do. There is no Tasmanian data. While a lot of surrounding ocean is included in the longitude and latitude, the UAH data is for land grids only. The black rectangle marks the land covered in the UAH satellite data, and it does cover the whole of mainland Australia, but not Tasmania. As an update here, there's a second set of data that does include Tasmania, and I'm just reading here from the actual page. So there is actually a second set of data which does include Tasmania. Anyway, continuing here from the article. Even if the UAH data included some ocean stats leaking into the mix, according to the Bureau of Meteorology, the ocean was the hottest on record in any case. The Age quotes the Bureau of Meteorology, telling us that seas weren't just warm, and it wasn't just 1 month, it was the hottest, and it was all of summer. This is from The Age. Seas around Australia are warmer than usual, with surface temperatures reaching record highs at the end of February. The Australian Bureau of Meteorology says summer ocean surface temperatures around Australia were the highest on record. Okay, so, as she says here, the Bureau of Meteorology have been issuing this hottest summer in Australia ever announcement for 2 weeks, even before the summer was over. March is still really considered summer in Australia. It's now April, of course, but these alarmist statements were coming out even in early March. And the angry summer has been all over the press, especially with this graph. And there's a shocking graph there that shows this just incredible increase in temperature, enough to really make you very, very scared. So the question here, did the Bureau of Meteorology plot the UAH comparison, and can they explain the discrepancy? Even if there is some explanation, the Bureau of Meteorology is not giving Australians any indication of how difficult, complex and questionable these continent-wide records are. And notice, when we played the interview there with Tim Flannery, notice how vague he was about the real facts. Notice how it was like, focus on individual high-impact sort of statements about extreme weather. And then say, well, that's consistent with our modelling. But then not ever giving you the even to a layman's level, the methodology or some indication that there was some rigor applied in terms of how they determined that. Of course, the Bureau of Meteorology has this information, but this information is just a compilation of weather measurements, which, again, it wasn't hot in Sydney. I guarantee that for you. It was not hot in Sydney. So it wasn't hot for everyone. Anyway, the Bureau of Meteorology is not giving Australians any indication of how difficult, complex and questionable these continent-wide records are. Few of the public would realise that the record depended on tricky and sometimes unpublished methods, on subjective choices made in waiting areas and subjective decisions on how to adjust individual records. And by that, and Joanne is being extremely diplomatic, but I will use the term fraud, I will use the term lying, I will use the term despicable and unforgivable. And the people concerned must be punished to the full extent of the law. I will leave that information for you on the website. certainly something there to look at. Just moving on with some other news, I'd just like to briefly mention that the Bank of Cyprus has announced that depositors could lose up to 60% of their savings. And this is quite a shocker, considering we had the original bailout there of Cyprus by the EU, where they said they were going to take 10% of savings. The Bank of Cyprus is now saying they're going to take 60%. So it's like, well, you should have taken the first offer we gave you, because now it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And I believe the government is now contemplating the Iceland solution. The situation with the financial collapse is one which I would love to spend more time on. Hopefully we'll get someone on to talk about that soon on the show. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to be with you today. Well, I'd like to turn now to some body scanner news. And I'd like to regularly update listeners on body scanners because, of course, we've now been subjected in Australia to these repulsive machines that invade your privacy and potentially affect your health and degrade human beings. I mean, they are essentially a prison type equipment, because strip searches is what normally happens in prisons. But travellers are being treated as if they were prisoners. And that is really the nature of it. That's the reality of it. Whether or not the health effects are serious or not, the civil liberties effects are dramatic. And whether or not, as they say, the privacy is protected, and we can't really know that for sure, the fact that you're forced to stand there in complete supplication to the authorities with your hands above your head in a state of complete surrender, and that you are refused entry to an aircraft unless you engage in this degrading little ritual, that alone is enough to make it abhorrent. Now, of course, they say that the body scanners that have been deployed, the ProVision millimeter wave scanners, protect your privacy. Well, really? How do we know that's true? Do we just trust what the government says, do we? I mean, we know that they lied before. We know that they said in the past that images were never retained, and then thousands of images emerged. They now say that with the body scanners that are in use in Australia, that your privacy is protected because the operator can only see this generic image of the body. Yes, but what other images are stored? How does the machine actually work? We know it bathes you in electromagnetic energy. We know that the imaging process is the same. Is there perhaps another image that is stored somewhere that the operator doesn't see necessarily, although he may see it? How do we know that that other image, which has all of those details which do violate your privacy, is not being stored? We don't. The problem here is the whole principle of it is wrong, and we should be rejecting it. I would like to resuscitate the movement that I was trying to create last year to bring awareness to body scanners and to try and get an organized movement of resistance against it. Now, I do have some news here from the US. The TSA begins a court-ordered rulemaking on a body scanner program. The TSA announced that it will begin a public comment process on its airport screening procedures. The action follows from a 2011 court order. In that case, the appeals court for the DC Circuit found that the agency unlawfully deployed body scanners in US airports. In a proposed two-sentence change to the agency's extensive regulations, the TSA seeks to grant itself authority to continue to deploy the nude body scanners without establishing privacy safeguards. Epic, which brought the successful challenge to the TSA program, is urging public comment on the agency proposal. Yes, well, the emphasis here is always on this, you know, the new scanners that will improve privacy. Well, you know something interesting? While the scanners are being rolled into Australia, they are being removed from airports all over the US. If you put body scanner into Google, you will find endless stories where they're actually removing the body scanners from regional airports all over the US. And there is no indication that they're going to be replaced. The argument they're making is they're saying, well, you know, it's the newer body scanners that we put in these regional areas, which are the good ones, that are going to replace the bad ones, which are in the major airports. So we're going to remove them from these airports. But why would they be doing that if in fact they were going to keep them there? I think they're actually in the process of scrapping them, and they're just doing it slowly. I think the public outrage and the common sense will eventually triumph in this. I don't think it's just going to be a slippery slope to the, you know, totalitarian sort of nightmare that we've all been fearing. But this type of thing is. That's why it's a principle you've got to follow. And what really bothers me in Australia is the complete lack of interest in opposing it, just a complete lack. So I will be continuing on that theme. I'll be returning to it regularly on this show. Now, one more story I'd like to cover today. The 9/11. We haven't talked about 9/11 for a while on Truth News Radio. And I just wanted to bring you a clip from Breaking the Set, a great show, if you haven't caught it already, on RT, hosted by Abby Martin, who is a hardcore 9/11 truther. She was involved in stuff, you know, protesting in the street. She was posted a lot on 911blogger.com, and she's an artist and now a journalist, and she's done a fantastic job there on RT and has put together some fantastic interviews. And in last week's show, she had a guy on where they were talking about the Pentagon and Dick Cheney and the alleged shoot down orders and the somewhat dishonest statements that Cheney had made. Now, I'm going to play to you, starting off with a clip here from the famous clip from Norman Mineta, Secretary of Transportation, and then we'll continue with the discussion here with Abby Martin and her guest.
During the time that the airplane coming in to the Pentagon, there was a young man who would come in and say to the vice president, the plane is 50 miles out, the plane is 30 miles out. And when it got down to the plane is 10 miles out, the young man also said to the vice president, do the orders still stand? And the vice president turned and whipped his neck around and said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary?
Okay, so here he is saying the order still stands. Cheney's directing him to do this. Obviously there was an order for something. If it wasn't for a shoot down order, what was it for?
Well, that's a great question, and that's something that the American public would probably love to have answered, but the problem is that testimony never actually made it inside the commission report. So, and Norma Mineta was actually asked about that later on. I think some independent journalist asked him about it, and he said that he wouldn't change anything he said in that testimony.
So Cheney, during the testimony, said the plane's 10 miles out, 20 miles out, 30 miles out. Does the order still stand? Cheney's saying, of course they still stand. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's talking about a plane coming close. Why do you think there wasn't an evacuation order issued from the Pentagon?
Well, that's also a great question. 125 people died in the Pentagon attack alone. And I think the reason that, you know, that hasn't been very talked, you know, it's not talked about very much that he knew of the impending plane attack, because, you know, 3,000 people died on 9/11 and, you know, 125 people seems minuscule in comparison.
I mean, we're talking about criminal negligence here.
Potentially, yeah.
Unbelievable. And I think a lot of other people don't realize, I briefly mentioned in the intro, that Cheney and Bush testified together, not under oath. And this is where he can't really be claimed for perjury or anything like that, because they weren't under oath. They testified together. Let's see that Bush responding to some questions about why they did this.
President, as you know, a lot of critics suggested that you wanted to appear jointly with the vice president so that you two could keep your story straight or something.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what you think of the value of appearing together and how you would answer those critics?
Yeah, first of all, look, I mean, if we had something to hide, we wouldn't have met with them in the first place. We answered all their questions. And as I say, I think I came away good about the session because I wanted them to know, you know, how I set strategy, how we run the White House, how we deal with threats. The vice president answered a lot of their questions. I answered all their questions. And I think it was important for them to see our body language as well, how we work together.
So, I mean, there he is. You know, it's a very bizarre answer. Why do you think that they didn't testify under oath here together? Or, I mean, that they were together, but they didn't testify under oath?
Well, I mean, they lied, first of all. I mean, why would someone not want to testify under oath unless they were planning on lying or, you know, obfuscating some part of the truth? And then on top of that, they testified together, not separately. I mean, I'd like to believe that Cheney was probably sitting in the corner sort of making faces at Bush, making sure he would, you know, stick to the story that he wanted to tell.
You know, I don't know that much about body language, but I've never really seen someone look more like they were lying than him right there.
Yeah,
I mean, he can't even get his story straight. The guy's just like, what the hell are you talking about? Let's talk about the 9/11 Commission itself, though, because there's so many crazy inconsistencies, you know, and glaring omissions. But let's talk about who was originally appointed to be on it.
Well, Henry Kissinger was not just on it, but he was appointed to be the head of the entire commission. The 9/11 widows, the victims' families, were outraged by that, so they quickly replaced him with a guy named Philip Zelikow, who was basically a White House lackey who wrote a book with Condoleezza Rice on foreign policy. And then, you know, several people resigned, or one person resigned, Max Cleland, from the commission out of protest. I mean, the entire commission from the outset was set up to fail, and that was actually a statement made by the two people who ended up authoring the book that was put out, Lee Hamilton and Keene.
Yeah, they actually did say it was set up to fail from the beginning. I mean, it took months, longer than any other initiation of a commission after a major disaster or an event. And it was actually pushed by the widows, the families, who said, why isn't this being investigated? It really was blocked from the very beginning. And when they finally were forced to investigate it, they put on Kissinger, then Zelikow, all these very close people, a lot of like airline lobbyists and lawyers as well. Let's talk about some of the glaring inconsistencies with the report itself. Because, you know, it just seems like they didn't really perform a real investigation. I mean, what do you think?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, the investigation was a total farce. I mean, they wanted the investigation, the commission, to tell the story that they wanted to tell. And when I say they, I mean that the White House wanted to tell. They omitted the war games that were going on the day of 9/11 that showed that the air defense response was delayed because all the jet fighters were tied up with war games.
I'll just have to leave it there. Great little interview there, and it's great to see this information getting out onto a big platform like RT. I think Abby Martin is doing a fantastic job on that show. I'm really, really, really grateful for her presence on that radio, on that television network. That's us for the week. We'll be back next week. See you then. It's been great talking to you.